Welcome back to the deep dive. It's amazing how sometimes, you can get a critique of something, and it's almost more interesting than the original work itself. And that's kind of what we're dealing with today. This deep dive request is so fascinating. It's an analysis of symbolism in Homestuck. And we're going to unpack so much from time travel paradoxes to like biblical parallels. Like, we're really going to go deep.
Yeah, symbolism can be like one of the most powerful tools,
Absolutely.
but it can also be so tricky because, when it's used effectively,
Yes.
it adds these layers of meaning.
Totally.
But when it's not, it just becomes muddled and confusing.
Yeah, and that's kind of like
And it sounds like that's,
a key point in this critique.
yeah, a key point in this critique for sure.
Yeah, well, right off the bat, this analysis dives into like a what if scenario. It really made me rethink the whole story.
You might be surprised to learn that the source thinks that Homestuck would have been so much stronger
Okay.
if it had been set in 1999.
Wow. Okay. So, like a full decade earlier. Huh. That's interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's fascinating to me about that is that it's not just an aesthetic choice, right? It's
No.
not just like, oh, this would be cool. It's that the source argues that by setting it in 1999, it captures that like turn of the century anxiety, especially around technology. Because think about it, we're talking pre-social media peak dial-up era. The internet was like this wild west.
Unexplored frontier.
Yeah,
So different.
exactly.
And wouldn't that just like make the characters even better?
Totally.
Like John's obsession with 80s movies.
Yeah.
And they're always using IRC to talk to each other.
Right.
It's like they're born out of time.
They're like these like little throwbacks, even in their own time.
And I think shifting the setting back then, it wouldn't just be cosmetic. It would add
Yeah.
this whole other layer of nostalgia,
Yeah,
this feeling of being on the cusp of something huge.
yeah. Good and bad.
Good and bad.
Well, totally. But here's where the critique gets even spicier. They argue that Homestuck suffers from a serious case of symbolism overload, where it actually like muddles the story instead of making it richer.
Yeah, and they really don't hold back.
No, they don't.
I mean, they're saying that Andrew Hussey, the author,
Yeah.
gets so caught up in his own cleverness
Yes.
that he loses sight of the narrative itself.
And they call out specific examples,
Like,
like the number eight. It's like everywhere.
it is
What
everywhere.
does it even mean?
It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
And then there's the lotus flower,
Yeah.
this ancient symbol of purity.
Yes.
But how does it actually connect to the characters or the plot?
It feels very surface level. Yeah.
To me, the most jarring example is the frogs. They pop up constantly throughout the whole thing.
Taunts, no.
But their symbolic significance, like, it only becomes clear much, much later in the story.
Way later. It's like he threw it in there to be like, ha ha, I'm messing with you. Okay.
It feels like a puzzle to solve.
More than
And a
like
reading
a
for
part of the story. Yeah. Okay, so that brings us to another point where the source proposes a different symbol system for Homestuck.
Oh, really? Like white
Yes.
bubbles.
Bubbles.
I mean, that sounds a little out there.
It does sound a little out there,
Okay, I'm
but
listening.
okay, so bubbles are fragile, obviously. They are. They're constantly changing.
Yeah.
But they also are striving for this perfect spherical shape. And the source connects this to like real world science, Plateau's laws, which govern the formation of soap films. So they're saying that bubbles could be tied into all these themes of like the universe's delicate balance, the fleeting nature of existence, this constant cycle of creation and
That's
destruction.
like a really creative
Ice is
approach.
a creative
It
approach.
makes you wonder if the story could have been even more powerful if
Totally.
it had had like a tighter, more intentional system of symbols.
I think so too. But I'm curious, like from your perspective as an expert, what do you think makes a symbol system truly effective?
That's a great question, and it's something I think about a lot, actually.
Yeah.
For me, a good symbol system, it has to resonate on multiple levels.
Okay.
It can't just be like one thing.
Yeah.
It needs to be visually striking,
Yes.
emotionally resonant, and it has to
Yeah.
tie into the core themes of the story
For sure.
in a way that feels organic and not forced.
Right. It can't feel like a puzzle.
Right? It shouldn't feel like an afterthought
Yeah.
or a puzzle to decode it.
Yeah.
should deepen our understanding of the characters in the world.
Yeah, and I think that's where this critique of Homestuck is so interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're not saying symbolism is bad. They're saying it needs to be used thoughtfully.
Thoughtfully and intentionally.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's where they really hit the mark.
Yeah. So let's move on.
Okay.
The source kind of takes us deep into the world of alchemy.
Yeah.
And specifically how the four main characters,
right,
John, Rose, Dave, and Jade,
mm-hmm,
are supposedly linked to different alchemical elements.
Interesting.
But is this symbolism as deep as it seems?
Right.
Or is this another case of the author getting a little too clever?
I mean, this is where things get really interesting, right?
Because yeah,
alchemy is all about transformation and the quest for perfection.
Yeah.
And each element traditionally carries these very specific symbolic meanings.
Yes.
And the source really breaks down how those meanings could apply to the characters.
They do, but that's where the problem lies, right?
Yeah, what is it?
Because they also point out where those connections just don't make sense.
Okay.
Especially with Dave.
Oh, yeah.
He's
yeah,
associated with fire, passion, impulsiveness.
Yeah.
But those traits don't really match his personality at all.
Yeah. He's much more about, like, irony detachment.
Yes.
Maybe even a bit of, like, emotional coldness.
Totally.
So is this a deliberate subversion of those alchemical principles or just like a mismatch,
yeah,
that weakens the whole symbolism?
Yeah, I think to grapple with this, we need like a little alchemy 101.
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
What are the key principles at play here?
Okay, so in a nutshell, alchemy was this fascinating blend of philosophy and early science.
Okay.
It was all about purifying and perfecting substances.
Okay.
Turning base metals into gold.
All right.
And even like achieving spiritual enlightenment.
Right.
Through this process of transformation.
Okay. So how does it relate to our Homestuck characters?
Well, the source tries to connect each character's personality,
yeah,
their actions, mm-hmm, even their like destiny,
oh,
to the properties of their assigned element.
Okay.
So for example, John, who's associated with water.
Yes.
Could represent adaptability, emotional depth.
Okay, I can see that.
Rose, linked to Earth, might symbolize stability.
Yes.
And grounded nature. But then
things get muddy.
Things get a little murky with Dave and Jade.
Yeah, especially Dave and Fire.
It just doesn't seem to click.
No, it doesn't click at all.
No, and that's what the source is really pushing us to think about.
Yeah.
Is the author using these elements in a way that deepens our understanding?
Right.
Or is it just like adding another layer of complexity for complexity's sake?
It's like they're saying, look, here's how you could have done it.
Right.
But you missed the mark.
Exactly.
It's a very interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. It's a critique that invites us to think critically about how symbolism is used.
For sure.
And whether it truly serves the narrative.
Okay. Well, before we get too deep into that.
Yeah.
We have to talk about another layer of symbolism that this analysis brings up.
What's that?
The biblical parallels in Homestuck.
Oh, this is where things get really interesting.
I know biblical references,
right,
in a webcomic about kids playing a video game. It's quite the combo.
Yeah, what are they picking up on?
Well, first of all, they argue that Homestuck is full of biblical imagery.
Okay.
From subtle allusions to very overt parallels.
Okay.
And they make a very bold claim about Dave.
Don't tell me they think he's a Christ figure.
They do.
They do.
Okay.
That's their big argument.
Okay. How do they justify that?
Well, they point to a lot of things.
Okay.
His time traveling abilities.
Okay.
His association with the number three.
The Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
Even the fact that he's the only beta kid without a serpentine denizen.
Oh, interesting.
Which symbolizes some sort of divine exemption.
Okay, so they're really looking at the details.
Yeah, when you start to think about it, those details add up.
They do, they do.
Yeah, and they also look at the bigger picture.
Okay.
They interpret Spurb, the game itself.
Right.
As a representation of human ambition versus a rogue AI.
Oh, wow.
This ultimate battle of good versus evil.
Like a classic.
Very classic.
Biblical theme.
Yes.
It's like they're saying Andrew Hussey is using these biblical echoes to explore these profound questions about humanity's place in the universe.
Yeah.
Free will versus destiny.
Right.
The whole shebang.
Yeah, but before we get too carried away, I think it's important to remember that biblical interpretation is incredibly complex.
Yes.
Not everyone's coming to this
with the same background,
with the same level of familiarity.
Well, so for those of us who might need a refresher,
yeah,
what are the key things to keep in mind?
Well, I think first and foremost, biblical stories are often open to multiple interpretations.
Oh, for sure.
What one person sees is a very clear parallel. another might see as just coincidence.
Right. It's all about perspective.
Exactly.
So it's a choose-your-own-adventure of interpretation.
Yes, exactly.
I like that.
But I think it helps to focus on those overarching themes and archetypes.
Okay.
Creation, fall from grace. Redemption, sacrifice.
Yes.
These are powerful narratives that resonate across cultures.
They do. And
yeah.
By using those familiar frameworks,
yeah.
Maybe Hussey is prompting us to view Homestuck in this new light.
Right.
To see the characters and their struggles as reflections of our own human condition.
Exactly. It's an invitation to grapple with those big questions.
Yeah.
To ponder the complexities of good and evil, fate and free will.
I love that.
But those aren't the only big ideas at play here.
Beef, what else?
This critique also connects Homestuck's themes to wait for it.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Jungian psychology.
Jung, as in?
The famous psychologist.
The one and only.
What does he have to do with a webcomic about teenagers and aliens?
I know, right? Buckle up, because this is where things get even deeper.
Okay, I am buckled.
Okay, good. The source focuses specifically on two Jungian concepts.
Which are?
Synchronicity,
right.
And platonic ideals.
Okay, I vaguely remember synchronicity,
yeah.
Having to do with meaningful coincidence.
Exactly. Right? It's the idea that seemingly unrelated events can be connected by this underlying meaning.
Even if there's no causal link between them.
Okay.
Like finding a four-leaf clover right when you need a little bit of luck.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you're telling me Homestuck is full of meaningful coincidences?
Well, that's part of the critique.
Okay.
They argue that the author uses synchronicity to explain away plot points that don't make logical sense.
That's like, oh, this crazy thing happened just because destiny?
Exactly.
Yeah, I see how that could get frustrating.
It's like he's taking a shortcut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of crafting a believable narrative.
Exactly.
Okay, what about platonic ideals?
Refresh my memory.
Remind me what those are again.
Okay, so Plato believed that the physical world we experience is just a shadow of this higher realm of perfect, unchanging forms.
Oh, wow.
So everything we see, trees, flowers, even people are just imperfect copies of these ultimate ideals.
So there's like a perfect blueprint for everything, but the real world versions are always a little flawed.
A little bit, yeah. Like a cosmic game of telephone where the message gets distorted along the way.
I love that. Yeah.
Okay, so how does that apply to Homestuck?
Well, the source argues that the author tries to apply this concept to the Alpha timeline.
Okay.
The true timeline.
Right.
They claim he sees it as this platonic ideal.
This perfect version.
Perfect and immutable version of events.
But isn't that at odds with the whole point of the story?
Right.
Like, Homestuck is all about choice, free will, how those things affect the timeline.
Yeah.
If there's already a perfect version, then what are we even doing?
Yeah. The character's actions don't really matter.
Right.
And that's exactly the source's point.
Yeah.
They argue that by trying to mash up Jungian psychology with this complex time travel narrative, it creates this huge paradox.
Yeah.
It undermines the very idea of Spurb as a video game.
Right.
Because if everything is predetermined,
where's the player agency?
Exactly. Where's the fun in that?
What are we even doing here?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very thought-provoking critique.
It is.
It makes you wonder if maybe the author was trying to do too much.
Juggling too many complex ideas without really thinking through the consequences.
Right. And speaking of consequences.
Oh, boy.
The source identifies Homestuck's time travel mechanics as a major weakness.
Okay.
They argue that the sheer volume of time hopping creates a convoluted narrative.
Yeah, it's hard to follow.
It's hard to follow. And it diminishes the impact of the story.
Totally. Because if you can just rewind and redo your actions whenever you want.
Yeah.
Where are the stakes?
Right.
Where's the tension?
It becomes like a video game with cheat codes.
Yes.
You can still play, but it's not as satisfying.
Totally. Okay, so what's the solution?
That is a great question. And it's something that writers have grappled with for ages.
Yeah.
I think one key is to establish clear rules.
Okay.
And limitations.
Boundaries.
Boundaries, yes. For how time travel works in your world.
So you can't just have characters hopping around the timeline willy-nilly.
Exactly. There have to be consequences for altering the past or the future.
Right. Otherwise, it's just a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And the reader loses all sense of cause and effect.
Exactly.
It's chaos.
Chaos.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our deep dive.
We have.
We've explored this alternative setting proposal.
Yes.
The critique of Homestuck's symbol system.
Right.
The alchemy.
Yes.
The biblical parallels.
We've been through a lot.
And then these Jungian psychology concepts.
Yeah.
And the complexities of time travel.
We're just getting started, though.
I know. Buckle up for part two.
Yes.
Where we're going to delve even deeper.
Deeper?
We're going to explore this proposed rewrite of the whole Homestuck story.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We're going to talk about the author's reliance on audience bullshit.
Ooh, exciting.
We're going to talk about the ending.
Can't wait.
It's going to be a wild ride.
I am ready.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Homestuck symbolism.
I know.
Before we jumped into this, I have to admit, I did not expect a critique of a webcomic to get so philosophical.
It is very philosophical.
If we're talking time travel paradoxes, yeah. Jungian archetypes.
I know.
My head is spinning.
But in a good way.
But in a good way.
In a good way.
But I think this next part of the analysis is maybe the most radical.
Okay.
The source lays out a full-blown rewrite of Homestuck.
Okay.
Streamlining the narrative.
Okay.
Reimagining some core elements.
Interesting.
And one of their biggest changes.
Yeah.
They propose scrapping the trolls entirely.
What?
I know it sounds crazy.
That's a big change.
But they make a compelling argument.
Okay, I'm all ears because I'll admit I have a love-hate relationship with the trolls.
Okay.
Some of them are great.
Yeah.
But they do add a whole other layer of complexity to an already very dense story.
And that's exactly their point.
Okay.
They argue that the trolls, while adding a certain quirky charm, ultimately detract from the core narrative.
Right, because Homestuck started as a story about these human kids
yes.
stumbling into this bizarre game.
Exactly.
It was about their friendship, their struggles yeah. to understand this new reality.
Right.
And then the trolls came.
Yeah, they came later.
It did shift the focus a little.
Yeah, and it shifted the focus away from that initial human connection.
That's true.
So they're suggesting by removing the trolls, the story could return to its roots.
Okay.
Allowing the human characters' relationships to really take center stage.
Okay, so it's a back to basics approach.
Yeah.
Stripping away the excess.
Yeah.
Focusing on the emotional core.
Exactly.
But I'm curious, as a storytelling strategy, do you think there's a risk of oversimplifying things?
It's a valid concern.
Yeah.
World building is a delicate art.
Yes, it is.
Too much can overwhelm the reader.
Ah.
Too little. And the world can feel flat and uninteresting.
It's all about balance.
Exactly. It's about finding that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Where the world feels rich and lived in.
Yes.
But it doesn't overshadow the characters.
Right.
And their journey.
So in this case, they're saying Homestuck maybe tipped the scales.
Maybe a little bit.
Too far towards world building at the expense of character development.
That's what they're arguing.
Interesting.
Yeah. They believe that really focusing on the human characters and their relationships would make for a more emotionally resonant story.
It makes you wonder if sometimes less is more.
Sometimes.
Even in a story as sprawling and ambitious as Homestuck.
Yeah.
But speaking of ambitious,
sorry.
This source also proposes a very radical shift in how the game itself
yeah.
Sperb is portrayed.
I love this part. This is where they get really thought-provoking.
Okay, tell me.
So instead of Sperb being this challenging but ultimately beneficial game.
Okay.
They reimagine it as the main antagonist.
Wait, so they're saying Sperb is evil?
Not necessarily evil.
Okay.
But definitely not benevolent.
Okay.
They suggest that Sperb could be this manipulative force.
Okay.
Almost like a technological dystopia.
Okay.
That's pulling the strings.
Oh, wow.
Using the players for its own unknown purposes.
That's dark.
It's a very dark turn.
Yeah.
But I think it raises the stakes. Suddenly, the characters aren't just fighting monsters and solving puzzles.
Right.
They're up against something much bigger.
Yes.
Much more sinister.
And unknown.
And unknown, exactly.
Yeah.
And it allows for some really interesting thematic explorations, you know?
Like what?
You could delve into the dangers of technology.
Oh, yeah.
The loss of free will.
Okay.
The nature of reality itself.
It's like they're turning Sperb into a metaphor for the dark side of video games.
Right.
The addiction. The escapism.
The manipulation.
The manipulation.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about the ways technology can control our lives without us even realizing it.
That is such a good connection.
Thank you.
It really highlights the power of using speculative fiction.
Yes.
To explore these real world anxieties.
I'm not sure.
But the source doesn't stop there.
They don't.
They don't. They propose a completely different ending for Homestuck.
Oh my gosh, they went all out.
They went all out with this rewrite.
What kind of ending?
So they suggest a reset timeline scenario where the characters essentially get a second chance.
Okay.
To undo the damage caused by the original game.
Right.
And to create a more hopeful future.
So the classic time travel trope.
Classic time travel trope.
Wiping the slate clean.
Yeah. Starting over.
How would that work with Homestuck?
Well, they imagine a scenario where the characters, having learned from their mistakes,
right,
use their time traveling abilities to go back, alter key events, and steer the timeline in a more positive direction.
It's like giving the characters and maybe even the readers a sense of redemption.
Exactly.
A chance to say, okay, we messed up.
Right.
But we can fix it.
Well, we can fix it.
It's a more optimistic take on the story.
It's a much more optimistic take.
But do you think it would be too neat and tidy for a story as messy and unpredictable as Homestuck?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And I think it gets to the heart of what makes a satisfying ending.
Okay.
Some people crave closure.
Yes.
While others prefer ambiguity. And I think it depends on the story you're trying to tell and the emotional impact you want to create.
Right. So in this case, they're arguing that a reset timeline ending would be more thematically appropriate,
yeah,
given their emphasis on hope and redemption.
And the power of human connection.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. But before we go any further.
Yeah.
Down this rewrite rabbit hole.
Right.
It's important to acknowledge that Homestuck,
yes,
for all its flaws, resonated with a huge audience.
It did. It really did.
It inspired so many fan works.
Yeah.
Online communities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Real life friendships.
That's the beauty of art.
It is.
It speaks to people in different ways.
Absolutely. And yeah, even if the source has valid criticisms, there's no denying that Homestuck had a profound impact on its readers.
Yeah, it tapped into something.
It did.
Whether it was the humor,
yeah,
the characters,
well,
the sense of shared mythology.
Yes.
And I think that's worth celebrating.
Absolutely.
Even as we critically analyze its shortcomings.
Okay, let's get back to the specifics of the critique.
Okay.
They spend a lot of time dissecting Dave's character.
They do.
And arguing that his association with the element of fire just doesn't fit.
Right. They point out that fire usually symbolizes passion, impulsiveness,
yeah,
even aggression.
Yeah. None of those things are very Dave Strider.
No, not really.
He's more about cool detachment.
Yeah.
Irony.
Yes.
Hiding his emotions behind a wall of sarcasm.
Just like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Exactly. And the source suggests that this mismatch is a symptom of a larger problem.
What's that?
The author prioritizing symbolism over character development.
Oh, interesting.
It's as if he decided,
yeah,
Dave will be fire because it fits the grand scheme.
Right.
But without really considering how it aligns with Dave's actual personality.
It's like the symbolism is driving the character.
Yes.
Instead of the other way around.
Instead of the other way around, what would they suggest as a more fitting element for Dave?
So surprisingly, they argue that Dave is actually a water character.
Water.
Water.
That's different.
It's a big shift.
How do they justify that?
So they point out that water is often associated with adaptability,
okay,
fluidity,
yeah,
and hidden depths.
Okay.
It can be calm and reflective one moment,
yeah,
then turbulent and powerful the next.
Okay. When you put it that way, I can see it.
Yeah.
He puts up this front of aloofness.
Yeah.
But underneath, there's a lot of emotional complexity.
A lot.
Yeah.
And they're suggesting that irony and detachment,
yeah,
are actually a defense mechanism.
Right.
A way of protecting his vulnerability.
He's protecting himself.
Yeah, it's like he's built this dam around his emotions.
A dam, that's a good one.
But there's this underlying current of feelings.
Yes.
That he's trying to control.
So they're saying that water, with its capacity for both stillness and turbulence,
yes,
is a more apt symbol for Dave's inner world.
For sure, it captures that duality, that sense of constantly navigating,
yeah,
between surface coolness,
right,
and these deeper emotional currents.
It's a good way to put it.
It really makes you wonder how much of this symbolic dissonance is intentional on the author's part.
Yeah.
And how much is just trying to fit too many complex ideas,
right,
into one story.
It's a lot.
It is.
But regardless of the author's intent,
yeah,
it's clear this analysis is encouraging us to think critically
about
how symbolism is used,
right,
and whether it truly serves the narrative.
Yeah.
Okay, we've tackled time travel.
We have.
Alchemy.
Yeah.
Dave's elemental identity crisis.
It's a lot.
What's next?
Well, you know, we can't avoid this forever.
Your ego.
The source goes pretty deep on the biblical parallels in Homestuck.
Okay.
And they don't hold back in their critique.
Yeah, we touched on the whole Dave as a Christ figure thing earlier.
Yeah.
But it goes beyond that.
It does.
What other biblical connections do they make?
Well, they point out that there are echoes of various biblical stories and characters.
Okay.
Woven throughout the narrative.
Yeah, okay.
They see references to the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
The flood. Well, apocalypse.
So it's not just a few subtle nods. They're saying there's a whole biblical subtext.
A whole biblical subtext running through Homestuck.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And they suggest that the author is using these references not just to add depth and meaning,
okay,
but also to advance his own personal beliefs.
Okay, now we're getting into tricky territory.
I know.
Are they saying that Andrew Hussey is using Homestuck as a platform to preach his own religious views?
Not explicitly.
Okay.
But they do imply that there's a certain level of authorial bias at play.
Okay.
A deliberate attempt to frame the story through a particular lens.
That's a bold claim.
It is a bold claim.
It does raise some questions about the role of the author in interpretation.
Right.
Can we ever truly separate a work of art from the creator's beliefs and experiences?
I mean, that's a debate that's been raging for centuries.
It has.
And there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to be aware of the potential for bias.
Yeah.
Both in the creation of art and in our own interpretation of it.
Right. So when it comes to the biblical parallels in Homestuck,
yeah,
we should be mindful of the author's potential intentions.
Yes.
While also being open to alternative interpretations.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance.
Yeah.
Between acknowledging the author's voice.
Right.
And allowing the text to speak for itself.
I like that.
But that's not the only area where the source sees authorial bias creeping in.
Where else?
They also have some strong words about what they call...
What's that?
Audience bullshit.
Audience bullshit.
Audience bullshit.
That's harsh.
It's a little harsh.
What do they mean by that?
They're referring to the author's tendency to pander to fan theories.
Okay.
And expectations.
Especially later in the story.
Especially in the later parts of the story.
So they're saying that instead of sticking to his original vision,
yeah,
he started catering to what he thought the fans wanted.
Exactly.
Even if it meant sacrificing the integrity of the narrative.
That's their argument.
Yeah. And they say this reliance on audience bullshit,
yeah,
ultimately led to a weaker, less satisfying conclusion.
Yeah. I could see how that could be a problem.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
It's great to engage with your audience.
Yeah.
But if you let their demands dictate the direction of your story.
Right. Then you risk losing your own voice.
You do.
It's a slippery slope.
It is.
Yeah.
And it really highlights the tension,
yeah,
between artistic integrity,
yeah,
and the desire to please your audience.
Especially in the age of online fandom.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
You know, it's interesting. This whole discussion about biblical parallels and audience bullshit actually ties back to something we talked about earlier.
Oh, really? What's that?
Jungian psychology.
Oh, Jung. How does that connect?
Well, remember we were talking about the source's critique of the author's use of synchronicity,
yeah,
and Platonic ideals.
Yeah.
They argue that the author uses these concepts,
yeah,
to justify plot holes and inconsistencies.
Right. Like he's saying, don't worry about logic or causality.
Exactly.
It's all part of the grand cosmic plan.
It's destiny.
Yeah.
But that undermines the reader's trust.
It does.
It's like the author is taking shortcuts.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the hard work of crafting a believable, satisfying narrative.
It cheapens the story.
Yeah.
It makes those moments of genuine wonder and surprise feel less impactful.
Because you're always wondering if it was planned.
Because you're always left wondering,
yeah,
if it's just the author manipulating events behind the scenes.
And then there's the Platonic ideals.
Yeah. Still trying to wrap my head around,
I know,
how that fits into Homestuck.
Yeah.
So the source suggests that the author is trying to present the alpha timeline.
Yeah.
That one true timeline.
Yes.
As this kind of Platonic ideal. It's the perfect unchanging blueprint for reality.
Okay.
While all the other timelines are just flawed copies.
But that's totally incompatible with the whole point of Homestuck.
Right.
It's built on the idea that choices matter.
Yeah.
There are infinite possibilities.
Right.
Characters can actually change the course of events through their actions.
Yeah. And that's what the source finds so frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like this attempt to reconcile Jungian philosophy,
yeah,
with this chaotic, unpredictable nature of Homestuck's time travel narrative.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
It doesn't track.
It creates a logical paradox,
yeah,
that undermines the whole foundation of the story.
This whole conversation about synchronicity, Platonic ideals, the alpha timeline,
yeah,
makes me think about free will versus determinism.
Oh, yeah. Big question.
Is everything predetermined?
Yeah.
Or do we have the power to shape our own destiny?
A question philosophers have been grappling with for centuries.
They have.
And I think Homestuck, intentionally or not,
yeah,
taps into that same existential dilemma.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if Andrew Hussey was even aware of the philosophical implications of the concepts that he was playing with.
Or maybe he was just throwing out ideas and seeing what stuck.
Maybe.
Without really considering the consequences.
Which leads us to the source's final point.
Okay.
Their analysis of creation, destruction, the nature of reality.
Big stuff.
Big ideas.
Big ideas.
Homestuck grapples with these constantly.
Constantly.
But does it ever really offer any satisfying answers?
That's the question, isn't it?
I mean, it throws a lot of big ideas at you.
Yeah.
Cyclical nature of time, the power of creation and destruction.
Right.
The blurry lines between reality and fiction.
Yeah, but I'm not sure it ever really commits to a perspective.
Yeah, and that seems to be the source's main criticism.
Yeah, what is it?
They argue that the author is more interested in posing provocative questions than in providing thoughtful answers.
It's like he's throwing a bunch of philosophical spaghetti at the wall.
I love that.
And seeing what sticks.
Without committing to a worldview.
Without committing to a coherent worldview.
And that can be frustrating.
It can be.
For readers who are looking for deeper meaning or insight.
For sure.
So is that it?
What?
Is this critique just a long list of complaints?
Not exactly.
Okay.
I think their critique is ultimately driven by a love for the story.
Okay.
And a frustration with its unrealized potential.
So they recognize the strengths.
They do.
The creativity, the humor.
Its ambition.
The ambition.
Yes. But they also believe it's ultimately hindered by these structural flaws.
Oh, okay.
And this lack of a clear thematic focus.
It's like they're saying this could have been a truly great story.
Yeah.
But it got lost in its own complexity.
Exactly. And I think that's such a valuable takeaway for any storyteller.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder that even the most imaginative and ambitious stories need a strong foundation.
Structure.
Structure.
Clarity.
Clarity.
Purpose.
A purpose, yes. Otherwise, you risk alienating your audience.
Yeah.
And losing sight of the heart of your story.
So where does that leave us?
Right.
What are we supposed to make of Homestuck?
Yeah, after this deep dive.
After dissecting every flaw.
I think the most important thing is to remember that literary analysis is subjective.
Oh, for sure.
There's no single right way to read or interpret a story.
Right.
This critique offers one perspective.
One lens.
One lens through which to view Homestuck.
So even if we don't agree with everything they say, it's still valuable to consider their points.
Absolutely.
Engage with the story on a deeper level.
Exactly. It's about asking questions.
Yes.
Challenging assumptions.
And forming our own conclusions.
Exactly.
And maybe that's the true legacy of Homestuck.
Right.
It's a story that provokes discussion, inspires debate.
And forces us to confront those big existential questions.
Yes.
About the nature of reality.
The power of storytelling.
Our own place in the grand scheme of things.
I love that.
Beautifully put. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our Homestuck deep dive.
Okay.
For now.
Thanks for joining us on this wild ride.
It has been a wild ride.
We'll be thinking about this one for a while.
Me too. And who knows, maybe it'll even inspire us to create our own stories.
Oh, yeah.
Filled with all the symbolism.
Philosophy.
The time-traveling shenanigans.
All the time travel.
We can handle.
Until next time.
Yes.
Keep diving deep.
Keep diving deep. Welcome back to the final part of our Homestuck symbolism, deep dive. I feel like we've gone so deep down the rabbit hole at this point.
I know, me too.
I'm not even sure which way is up anymore.
From alchemy to biblical parallels to Jungian psychology.
It's been a lot.
It's been quite the journey.
It has. But I think this last part might be the most mind-bending yet.
Oh, really?
This source, like, really dives into the philosophical core of Homestuck.
Okay.
Exploring those existential questions about creation, destruction, and the very nature of reality.
Big questions.
Big questions.
Okay. I'm intrigued. But before we get to the cosmic level questions, I'm really curious about one character in particular.
Who's that?
John.
John. Okay.
He's usually seen as like the main protagonist, the one who sets the whole story in motion.
Right.
But I have a feeling this critique is going to challenge that assumption.
You know, they argue that John, despite being the supposed hero, is actually a remarkably passive character.
Really?
He reacts to events.
Okay.
More than he drives them.
Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, he does have a tendency to go with the flow. He does let others take charge.
Yeah.
But isn't that part of his charm?
Maybe.
He's like the relatable everyman.
You're right.
The audience surrogate.
Yeah.
Who's thrown into this crazy world.
That's true. But the source suggests that there's a deeper issue at play here.
Okay. What's that?
They argue that John's passivity isn't just a character trait. It's a symptom of the author prioritizing symbolism over genuine character development.
So they're saying that John's role in the story is more about fulfilling a symbolic function, the hero archetype, than about being a fully realized individual with his own agency and motivations.
It's like he's a pawn in the author's grand symbolic game, rather than a character with his own desires and goals.
Which makes me think about the other characters, too.
Right.
Are they all just playing out their assigned roles in this cosmic drama? Or do they have any real freedom to make choices that actually matter?
That's a question that haunts a lot of Homestuck fans.
I think so.
That tension between free will and predestination.
Yeah.
It's woven into the very fabric of the story.
It is. Okay, let's circle back to those Jungian concepts we were talking about.
Okay.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
And Platonic ideals.
Uh-huh.
The source clearly has some issues with how the author uses those ideas.
Oh, they do.
In Homestuck.
Yeah. Remember how we were discussing how the author seems to use synchronicity as a kind of get out of jail free card?
Yeah.
Like whenever something inexplicable happens,
right,
it's chalked up to meaningful coincidence.
Yeah. Even if it feels contrived.
Yeah. It's like, don't worry about logic or causality.
Right.
It's all part of a grand cosmic plan.
It's destiny.
But I feel like that undermines the reader's trust.
It does, because it's like the author is taking shortcuts.
Exactly.
Instead of doing the hard work of crafting a believable and satisfying narrative.
And the source argues that that reliance on synchronicity ultimately cheapens the story.
It does.
It makes those moments of genuine wonder and surprise feel less impactful.
Because you're always wondering if it was planned.
Because you're always left wondering if it's just the author manipulating events behind the scenes.
Okay, and then there's Platonic ideals.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around.
I know, it's a tough one.
How that fits into Homestuck.
Yeah, well, the source suggests that the author is trying to present the alpha timeline.
Right.
That one true timeline.
Right.
As this kind of Platonic ideal.
Like, it's the perfect unchanging blueprint for reality.
Okay.
While all the other timelines are just flawed copies.
But isn't that fundamentally incompatible with the whole concept of Homestuck?
Right.
Like, the story is built on the idea that choices matter.
Yeah.
That there are infinite possibilities.
Right.
And that characters can actually change the course of events through their actions.
Right. And that's what the source finds so frustrating.
Okay.
They argue that this attempt to reconcile Jungian philosophy with the chaotic, unpredictable nature of Homestuck's time travel narrative, it just doesn't work.
It creates a paradox.
It creates a logical paradox that undermines the whole foundation of the story.
This whole discussion about synchronicity, Platonic ideals, and the alpha timeline makes me think about the age-old debate.
What's that?
Free will versus determinism.
Oh, yeah.
Is everything predetermined?
Right.
Or do we have the power to shape our own destiny?
That's a big one.
Yeah, the big question. And one the philosophers have been grappling with for centuries.
And Homestuck, intentionally or not, really taps into that dilemma.
It does.
It makes you wonder if Andrew Hussey was even aware of the philosophical implications.
Of the concepts he was playing with.
That he was playing with.
Or maybe he was just throwing things out there and seeing what stuck without considering the consequences.
Which leads us to the source's final point.
Okay, shoot.
Their analysis of those grand overarching themes.
Okay.
Creation.
Yeah.
Destruction. Mm-hmm. The nature of reality.
Big stuff.
Huge ideas that Homestuck grapples with constantly.
It does.
But does it ever offer any satisfying answers?
That's a great question. I mean, the story throws a lot of big ideas at you.
It does.
The cyclical nature of time.
Yeah.
The power of creation and destruction.
Right.
The blurry lines between reality and fiction.
Yes, but I'm not sure it ever really commits to a particular perspective.
Yeah, and that seems to be the source's main criticism.
What's that?
They argue that the author is more interested in posing provocative questions than in providing thoughtful answers.
So it's like he's throwing a bunch of philosophical spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
And seeing what sticks.
Without ever really committing to a coherent worldview.
Right, and that can be frustrating for readers who are looking for a story that offers some kind of deeper meaning.
Deeper insight.
Or insight.
Yes.
So is that it?
What?
Is this critique just a long list of complaints about Homestuck's shortcomings?
Not exactly. I think their critique is ultimately driven by a love for the story.
Okay.
And a frustration with its unrealized potential.
So they see the good and the bad.
they recognize its strengths, the creativity, the humor, the ambition.
Yeah.
But they also believe that it's ultimately hindered by its structural flaws and its lack of a clear thematic focus.
It's like they're saying this could have been a truly great story.
Yeah.
But it got lost in its own complexity.
Exactly. And I think that's a valuable takeaway for any storyteller. What's that?
It's a reminder that even the most imaginative and ambitious stories need a strong foundation.
That's fair.
Structure, clarity, and purpose.
Otherwise, you risk alienating your audience and losing sight of the heart of your story.
The heart of it all.
So where does that leave us? Yeah. What are we supposed to make of Homestuck after all of this?
After this deep dive and dissecting every flaw?
Yeah.
I think the most important thing to remember is that literary analysis is subjective.
It is.
There's no single right way to read or interpret a story.
Yeah. This critique offers one perspective.
One lens through which to view Homestuck.
And even if we don't agree with everything they say, it's still valuable to consider their points.
For sure.
And to engage with the story on a deeper level.
Absolutely. It's about asking questions.
Challenging assumptions.
And ultimately forming our own conclusions.
And maybe that's the true legacy of Homestuck.
What is it?
It's a story that provokes discussion.
Yeah.
It inspires debate.
And it forces us to confront those big existential questions.
Yes, about the nature of reality, the power of storytelling, our place in the grand scheme of things.
Beautifully put.
Thank you.
I think it's time to wrap up our Homestuck deep dive.
I think so, too.
For now, thanks for joining us on this wild ride.
What a journey.
I have a feeling we'll be thinking about this one for a while.
Me, too. And who knows? Maybe it'll even inspire us to create our own stories filled with all the symbolism, the philosophy, the time-traveling shenanigans we can handle.
Until next time, keep diving deep.
Bruh.